Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. Hello there, Mr. Grant.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, getting into a subject this week, one of your favorites, and that is the estate plan's worst enemy. Are there more than one?
There really are.
Enemies?
That's right. It is plural. There are plenty of enemies of estate planning, and I'm not talking about theory. I'm not talking about that people would say don't do an estate plan. Not that type of an enemy.
Okay.
But what if we look at an estate plan? What does it mean that an estate plan will work or it will not work? And I think it's a very clear dividing line. So what I typically mean when I talk about an estate plan working is that if a client were to come into my office, sit down and give me a picture of what they hope an estate plan will accomplish, then it's my job to take that picture, what they are telling me about themselves, about their family, about their finances, about their future vision, their values, wrap it all up together. And my job is to create a predictable, known outcome. So I want listeners to hear that again. My job is to take an individual's vision, what they believe they want to have happen should they become incapacitated or die. Because remember, estate planning is not just about dying. It's also about living. We got to protect people during their lifetime. And my job is to take the information they give me and create a predictable, known outcome. And what my biggest concern is in estate planning in general is that that rarely, if ever, happens. Now,
really?
Of course, I can't interview people after they've died, so it's really hard for me to know exactly what the person's intent was other than by looking at the document, right? Or by having family members talk to me and say, but that's not what mom or dad wanted, or they talked about doing this, or they were hoping for this. And then I have to look at the legal document and say, but that's not what was accomplished. And I can also tell whether an estate plan will work and whether it's aligning by how a person conducts both their estate plan plus their assets plus any other written discussions that they may leave behind. And so therefore, if there is a disassociation or if those are not perfectly blended together, then it tells me that the estate plan did not operate because we have one component of the estate plan working one way, another component working in a completely different way, and others yet still going a different direction. And so obviously there's no unity. There's nothing that's fitting all the different pieces that are necessary to create a predictable known outcome. So therefore, we have some enemies. And I want to talk about what some of these enemies to estate planning are. And that's really what we're trying to nail down is what is disjointed in an estate plan, or how does an estate plan become off-centered compared to maybe when it was created versus the passing of time versus any other issue. And so, there are some estate planning enemies out there. So let's talk about them.
Okay. Well, barring the first enemy, it kind of goes without saying that first you need an estate plan. You say 50% of people don't even have a plan.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So it's understood. So we're talking about people who have a plan. First thing that I would think that you mention a lot during your shows is people don't update their plans very often, and that's a real enemy.
That's right. As a matter of fact, that's what I would consider to be our worst enemy is just simply the passing of time. And so there's many components to the passing of time that maybe people don't give pause to think about. Therefore, let's pause and let's think about what does it mean for time to pass by, and how does it influence an estate plan? Well, first of all, there's three main components, I think, that we can categorize what happens with the passing of time. First of all, we understand that there's family changes and that there's personal changes and financial changes. So in other words, from the client's perspective, life is an ebb and flow. It is not stagnant. So therefore, how can a stagnant document keep up with the changes just in the client's life? And I have many people, well, I'm not going to make any changes. Well, you can't predict that and you can't determine that. And actually, mankind has tried to control change forever and ever, and it's never worked. So therefore, it's a failed premise to say, I'm not going to make many more changes to my estate plan. And so that's the first category of changes. As we look at the family dynamics, we look at the financial dynamics, and even the value dynamics. So I'll get back to that. Then the second category is that we have the law that keeps moving. And so the law is always changing. There's new laws that are being passed. There's case law. In other words, someone will sue somebody and a judge determines that this is the way that that law is to be interpreted, and it sends the law in a minor shift, sometimes a large shift, but typically they're very minor shifts. But minor shifts make a more dramatic shift. So the law constantly moves and taxes constantly move. And so those things are always in motion. And again, the question is, how can a stagnant piece of paper keep up with changes? And then the third category that always changes is, well, my knowledge, estate planning as a whole. So attorneys keep coming up that when things change, when the law moves or when taxes move, we go back to the drawing board and say, okay, so what's in my client's best interest? Because that's my job, to take the law and look at it and adjust what I have been doing for clients to make sure that their vision is still going to be enacted. And so I need to continually make fine-tuned adjustments. And I ask my clients, do you hope that I'm exactly the same attorney next year as I am today? Or do you want me to learn more and become better? And every person automatically says, well, of course, we expect you to get better. It's not just that we hope you get better. So then if I don't have the opportunity to watch over clients' information, then how do clients get the most relevant information back into their documents if there's no such thing as a relationship? And if anyone's listened to my show for any length of time, you know that I am about relationship in everything I do. It is not about getting a document. It is about ensuring that there is a predictable known outcome. So therefore, relationship is absolute. It's necessary. It is absolutely necessary to ensure that there is a proper document that is available and ready when we need to use it. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, those are the kind of the three main categories that we talk about. And so maybe we can uncover those a little bit more in our discussion here between these three categories. So the first one was personal. The second one is legal and tax. And the third is just that estate planning in general continues to move. So in other words, the professional side of the equation. So those are the three main categories that we need to be watching over. And again,
okay, well,
a stagnant document can't work.
Starting then with the personal, I have a question. How early or young in a person's life do you start an estate plan? I mean,
yeah, that's a really good question.
Is it just when you get a bunch of money, then you start having an estate? Are you when you get married or?
So the law would say that if you are 18 years or older, that you have now become a magical adult. I have 23 and 24-year-old girls, and I would vehemently disagree of whether they have reached adulthood or not. But and since they don't listen to this show, then I can talk about them all I want. So the first step is really anyone who is over the age of 18 should have some very basic documents in place.
Okay.
So if one of my daughters was in a car accident and ended up in the hospital, and the injury was severe enough that they were unable to make medical decisions for themselves, who makes the decision? Now, as long as I go along with doctors, I've talked about this with spouses too, by the way. So as long as the family members are going along with the doctor's recommendations, doctors will continue to do their job ethically because that's what they're supposed to do. But as soon as I say stop, that's not what I want for my daughter. That's not what I want. That's not what she would want. Then a doctor is going to have to say, okay, great. But if I'm going to go away from what I believe is to be the best treatment, then I need you to demonstrate that you have the legal authority to direct me. And so therefore, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a child, whether it's a parent, screaming and yelling is not going to get the job done. The ring on the finger doesn't get the job done. A legal document does. And so therefore, I think there's a lot of misconception about, well, the doctors did what I asked them to do. Well, that's because you were probably in line with their treatment and they didn't feel that they needed to stop the process to say, where's your legal authority? So therefore, anyone who's over the age of 18 needs medical power of attorney. They need a financial power of attorney. If I had to utilize my daughter's finances for one reason or another, and if I'm not on the account or some other makeshift way of actually accessing things, then I need legal authority.
Even if they're still living with you?
Sure.
Home? Okay.
Sure.
Right.
Because they've reached 18. They are a legal adult.
Okay.
So therefore, I mean, like I said, there's makeshift ways to get around good estate planning, but those makeshift ways have other dangers, which I'm not going to get into today, but they have other pitfalls. So therefore, at the age of 18, now on a practical level, let's pull back and answer the question a little more practically. So most people start thinking about estate planning either when they get married, when they do start accumulating a few assets, even though that's really not a very good barometer, actually, of people thinking about estate planning, or when they have kids. And kids tend to be the one thing, the catalyst that says, okay, now we really have to step up to the plate and become adults. So I have people in their 40s who have, you know, kids in their teenagers say, well, I guess it's time to be an adult. It's like, you're 40 years old. Of course it's time. So therefore, that seems to be, on a practical basis, the real thing that drives. And then I've talked about other incidences when people look at their estate plan. So I'm in my 50s. I know I sound so much younger, but I'm in my 50s and my parents are much older. So therefore, as I watch my parents go through challenging times, then it becomes something I think about. And then retirement is the next type of big event that people then come back to the table and go, I should really, really do estate planning now.
Mm-hmm.
So those tend to be the three big moments that people naturally think about estate planning and actually get to somebody to say, let's have a conversation at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking at the estate plan's worst enemy or enemies, plural, Paul Grant is telling us about those this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. If people are listening to you and they know they do need to start an estate plan or they have tax questions, anything else, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's opportunities to listen to past podcasts. So we've got all of our shows there. We also have upcoming educational workshops. And so they're intended to be interactive, where you can ask questions, where we ask thought-provoking questions for you to actually engage and think through the process of estate planning. And so there's upcoming educational workshops that are on our website. You can also shoot me an email, tell me how I'm doing, give me your thoughts, ask questions, so hopefully we can answer them in shows that are coming up. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show. featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week with Paul Grant, looking at enemies of estate planning. There are many of them, many kind of a minefield out there of things that you want to watch out for. Paul, you were talking about some of the personal enemies that we need to watch out for.
Absolutely. So there's multiple things that change in our life that we need to really be aware of. Now, here's the difficulty is that most individuals don't know when a personal change raises to the level that we should actually contact an estate planner again and actually sit down and look at that issue and say, well, this has happened and I need to come back and review the estate plan. As a matter of fact, most estate plans are not reviewed for minimally 10 years. And that's usually if someone utilizes a trust instrument, that somehow if utilizing a trust instrument, it makes us think about estate planning more often, or because the assets are not in the trust properly, or there's just enough changes. Now, people who use wills, they tend to come back to the table in twice that amount of time. So every 20 years. Now, both of those are huge gaps.
Yeah.
They're huge gaps. And so if we think about what has taken place over the past 10 years of our life, and so listeners, I just ask you to stop for a second. Think about this question. What has happened in the past 10 years in your family, in your finances, in your health? And here's one that we don't think about too often. What has happened and how has your personal perspective changed over the past 10 years in light of all those things? And so we're created to be refined. We're created to be adjustable. Now, we hope as believers that we are being refined and changed in the image of God, which moves from glory to glory to glory. And so we hope that we're not taking steps backwards, right, in our Christianity. So in 10 years, where has your faith journey alone come? I hope that it has increased. I hope that there have been steps that have moved you closer to Jesus Christ, more understanding, revelation, wisdom, and knowledge about who he is. And when that happens, I'm hoping that it begins to adjust how we respond to the gospel. And not only how we respond, but are we then taking on more of his image in our thought process? And what I believe is that as that transformation takes place, and as we apply faith to that new wisdom and knowledge, then it begins to adjust our values. So now, not necessarily our morals. I say that my morals have been unchanged over the past 10 years, but my values and how I view life, how I view finances, how I view my kids. So my girls, 23 and 24 years old, 10 years ago, they were 13 and 14. So has my perspective changed over the past 10 years on how I view my girls? And the answer is absolutely. Yeah. Now, I could ask the same question to my parents, which is, over the past 10 years, when Paul was in his 40s compared to his 50s, mom and dad, have your views changed about who I am, or have they changed on my progression over the past 10 years? And you know what is amazing? Mm. The same answer is there, which is absolutely. Mm. We're glad that you're finally an adult. It is probably their response, but I don't know. So I have asked my parents this question, and the answer is exactly the same answer that I have from teenage to young adult versus mid-adult to a little bit older of mid-adult. I don't know what my age bracket should be called. Mm. So the issue is, have there been differences in opinion during those 10 years? And if that is true, if you accept the premise that yes, my values of life, my values of money, my values over my children, how I view things, in other words, is what I'm talking about, values. And have I changed as a person over the past 10 years? I think the answer, and the resounding answer for most people, would be yes, I have made adjustments in how I view my life, my family, my finances. And so therefore, is the stagnant document, is the information that you gave the estate planner 10, 15, 20 years ago, is there any way at all that the new values are still reflected in the old document? Hmm. And my answer is there is absolutely, it's an impossibility. Hmm. It's an impossibility that an old stagnant document reflect your current values as they have grown and as they have matured and as they have changed.
Why do you think people wait so long to update their plans?
Boy, if I knew that, that would probably be the magic pill, wouldn't it be? Because then I would just hit the target and everyone would just start doing estate planning. Mm. I've had a radio show now for 2 years trying to get people into motion. And maybe it's worked a little bit, but maybe it hasn't. And so I'm not sure. I think one of the bigger things, which is a different danger, we'll probably get to it next week, which is the lack of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have proper knowledge. We don't have proper foundational information to shape how we're supposed to look at estate planning. And that's really what a lot of this discussion is supposed to do, is your vision of estate planning properly aligned? So therefore, you're going to be able to get a predictable known outcome from your estate plan. Because look, here's the problem always. I've used this analogy multiple times over the past couple of years, which is estate planning is easy. Just tell me 30 days before you die and we'll get it right. But because we don't know that date, and I'm not sure I want to know that date, then we have to be ready at all times. And that's the problem with the gap. The gap of time says there is an inefficiency that is beginning to creep into the plan. It might have worked right out of the gate. It may have been perfectly great as soon as you signed ink to paper. Mm. But then how fast does it change? I don't know. Mm. I just don't know. One of the other factors that we have in there, Mark, is that the attorney, in other words, myself, the industry constantly changes. So I've used this story before, which is I developed an estate plan, and then 2 weeks later, I went to a conference, and I learned something different. I learned something that was not in the estate plan that I had just created 2 weeks ago. Mm. So let me ask you, is the estate plan from just 2 weeks ago, is it at its highest level of legal and tax efficiency?
Well, it depends on what you learned.
That's correct.
Like if you learned about a big new tax shelter that you could employ.
Which is exactly what I learned.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we did. That was the whole premise, which is that there was a different approach for tax issues that generations could benefit from. So is that something that most people would say, ooh, I'd like to know that information? And most people would say yes. So therefore, what I just created 2 weeks ago was now not perfectly efficient on the taxing side. So when will an estate plan wear down? I don't know. And that's the problem. Hmm. Unless a client stays in communication and talks about what's happening on the family side, what's happening on the financial, what's happening to their change of perspective and their values and how they view everything, unless they come back and say, hey, this organization I was giving money to, or I was supporting these missionaries and now they're going to retire. You know how many missionaries are retiring right now? And we have a lag of new missionaries coming in. And so is support, and do we have specific monies going to people that are no longer available or are no longer hitting the purpose of what the original intent was? And so therefore, all of these things begin to change. And then if I don't have the way as the estate planner to communicate with clients, then I can't tell you what the new legal changes are, what the new tax changes are. Mm. So now the good news, I'm going to give you bad news and good news all simultaneously. Number one, the bad news is that no, attorneys will not contact you when they learn something new. Okay? That's the bad news. Now, that's different in my system because we have a relationship. So annually, I communicate with my clients. However, I believe that I am extremely unique. As a matter of fact, think about if you used an attorney, when's the last time you got legal updates from them? And the answer is never. They never recommunicate. And it's another problem with the estate planning field in general. Mm. And so therefore, if the attorney is not communicating to you, then the client doesn't know. And so we've set up this gap of information and this knowledge again. So these are some of the big deals, is that time is your worst enemy in estate planning. Mm. And you need to have a relationship. We need to be reviewing these things far more often than what people realize. And so head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's opportunities to communicate. There's opportunities to get educational workshops, interactive workshops, to sign up for one. We gotta fill in this gap. And it's a big one because I want to create a strategic, personalized estate plan that gives you a predictable known outcome in estate planning.
Sounds like time is the worst enemy, so no time like the present. To contact Paul, again, legacyandfaith.com for more details on how you can work out your situation in your estate or tax planning issues with Paul Grant. Always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.